Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, Chris Crelly has experience in aging gracefully. In fact, he's effectively written the book on it, several books to be exact. He started the Younger Next Year book series, and with each one of these books, he partners with another expert. Chris is back with Dr. Jeremy James of backforever.com, and they've co-authored the Younger Next Year Back book. Now, at some point in our lives, about 80% of Americans will seek expert help for back pain. It's an epidemic with a cost to society in medical expenses and lost productivity that's steeper than heart disease. Now, if you've had back pain, severe back pain, you know how debilitating it is. And oddly enough, as our guest Chris Crelly says, while the spine and its contributing parts are exquisitely complex, solving back pain is surprisingly simple. Chris Crelly, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Hi, it's Chris Crelly.
Well, excellent.
That was a wonderful introduction, by the way. I think we can just hang up now. You summarized the whole darn thing.
Oh, no. We have lots of questions for you.
Good.
And let's start off with the Younger Next Year series. We spoke to you with the first one, then with Thinner Next Year. And I think the art of what you do, Chris, is that you just make everything so simple. And you've been through all of this. You've had a lot of birthdays, shall we say.
I'm so old, and I know a lot of weird stuff.
And so, you get together, in this case, in the back book with Dr. Jeremy James.
Yep.
And he's the expert, and he gives the technical details. But you say, okay, listen, it's really simple.
Tell people, he's young and smart, and I'm old and funny.
And that's how you've sold 2 million books in 23 yep. different languages.
Still a cult book, by jolly. That old Younger Next Year, man, just keeps rolling.
So you found Dr. Jeremy James in Aspen.
He found me, but yes.
Okay. What most impressed you about his practice and what he is doing to help people with back pain?
Two things. First of all, I know Jeremy well. He helped me put on some retreats for Younger Next Year retreats. We got to know and like each other. But two things. One, he's just on fire about this stuff. He cares like crazy. But two, he's the most successful guy in this field. He has an 80% success rate, which is off the charts in this area. Nobody does that well. We spend, as you pointed out, it's $100 billion a year on back pain, and it mostly goes right down the rat hole. His technique works. And more interestingly, he was persuaded that we could convey it in a book so people could do it themselves. We think we have. We'll see how it goes.
Chris, I'm a little bit confused about what started the whole series. Was it the Thinner Next Year or Thinner This Year?
It was Younger Next Year, and I'm proud to say that I had the fundamental idea. And then I went and found Harry Lodge, a wonderful doctor in New York, and one of my very closest friends who died very young a year ago. It made me crazy. He was the brains of the book. I had the basic notion that most American aging is a slow, steady decline. Do some stuff, and you can square that curve, be about the same guy, same girl from 40 until 80 and beyond if you do some serious behavioral change.
And when was that? Back in the early 2000s that you started the Younger?
It came out effectively in early 2005.
Yeah.
And it's still a cult book. It's interesting. Books don't change lives, but this one really did. For some reason, it was kind of sticky. People actually do it. We get these letters all the time. Hey, man, thanks for writing that book. You changed my life. Blah, blah, blah.
And people are changing their lives. I mean, just to, as an observation, I don't have any data to, confirm this, but you look at people who are in their 70s and their 80s, and even so many people are going into their 90s now, and they look healthy, and they are active, and they are vibrant, and that's a recent phenomenon, I believe, again, just as an observation, but maybe you have some data to back that up.
I think you're right. We don't have any data either, but I do think there's a change like that. I hope we're part of it. We sure do want to be. But, we live. Our life expectancy has gotten an awful lot longer since World War II. Our life expectancy has gone from, 60 years to 80 years. It's just amazing in no time, in evolutionary time. It's just remarkable. And the quality of life, that's what we worry about. The quality of life is getting better, and we hope we help.
So let's talk about the back. You pretty much say, and Dr. James as well, is that the problems with our backs, almost 100% of the time, we have created. And there are a couple of things that we consistently do wrong. What are those?
Well, let me interrupt. Let me just go back for a second, because I think it's so important. People think that, you know, the way back pain grabs you the first time, you roll over funny in bed, oh, I threw my back out. You picked up a box of books, it was heavy than it looked, oh, I threw my back out. It seems like something quick. It's not something quick.
Right.
You didn't throw it out. It's something that you did over time. You built your own back pain over time with your own behavior. Some of it dumb, some of it impossible to know unless you read books about it, but you carried yourself in a certain way. The most obvious one is you sit hunched over a computer for 10 years. You know, you can do that for a week or a month or a year, but you do it for a long time, your back's going to kill you. It's just going to happen. And there are a lot of other little things like that. Some people exercise the wrong way. I mean, the good kids are out there doing sit-ups and whatnot, but they're doing the wrong way. They're doing the wrong kind. One of our first rules is quit doing dumb stuff. That's kind of a mean way to put it. But we list some things that people do that they may or may not think about.
And if you've never had excruciating, debilitating back pain, it is great to read, which I never have, even though I have scoliosis. Oh. I read Dr. James' description of when he woke up one morning, he's in bed, he's been hunched over his computer, even though he knows better, for the last couple months, and he has that excruciating pain where he can't even move.
And amazing. I talk to these people all the time. Like you, I've been lucky. I've got good posture and I work out all the time, so I don't get it. But I talk to these people now, and brother, it is just stunning how bad it is. People can't go to work. They can't get off the floor. I mean, there's a reason we spend $100 billion a year on this stuff, because it's just agony.
I have, like Lynn, I don't currently suffer from any back pain, but boy,
I had a
4-year stretch where I definitely did, and I managed it, is how I called it managing it. But what I learned was one of your rules, which is finding the natural or the neutral position in your back.
Oh, yeah.
And
I've
done that. Yeah, I've done that in two different ways, which I think are kind of interesting. One was a hard mattress, which put me into a neutral position when I slept. And the other was by squeezing my knees together with one of those roller logs. I was able to, what I say, pop my hips. I can get them to actually pop, which I think is realigning them and putting my whole structure into that neutral position. And by doing that,
I can't address that because I don't know about that gadget, but I can say that one of the core things that Jeremy talks about is finding and holding your neutral spine. It's too simple to say it's a matter of standing up straight. It's more than that. But once you find your neutral spine, if you can carry yourself through life with a neutral spine, both standing and sitting and lying down and doing sports and athletics and all that stuff, it can be done all the time. You got to think about it until it becomes second nature. Then you have to do a lot of work on your core to make yourself strong enough to just live like that, which ain't so easy, but it sure is worth it.
What are the tricks that the doctor points out for finding your neutral spine?
I'm not very good on this. You need Jeremy more than me, but you lie on your back and do the cat and camel thing where you arch and unarch your back, and then you find the most comfortable spot for you. Mostly it's going to be standing up with your head back, your shoulders back, and everything straight up and down. But you may vary. You may have some scoliosis, so you may have your back a little flatter than the others. But you find it by what's the most comfortable position you're doing that cat and camel workout.
So ever since I picked up your book, I've had this amazing engaged core. You know, you
good
can't
you.
Read your book without engaging your core. My question to you is an engaged core, or if you engage your core and that's all you do, are you strengthening your core?
No,
okay.
Maybe, but not enough.
Okay.
The trick is to be able to engage your core. That's the end goal. But I think it makes a world of sense to take a hard look at Jeremy's exercises and learn how to strengthen your core. It takes a lot of strength, frankly, to be able to keep an engaged core all the time. Do the exercises, and it's easy. If you don't do the exercises, unless you're just in great shape, it may be hard.
The 7 daily exercises. These are so simple. And again, this is the beauty of your book. We kind of know these things, but we need to be told, reminded, told, pestered over and over again. And that's what you do.
Some of it you think you know. One of the interesting problems that I run into this with a bunch of these, with different books, people think, everybody's exercised at one point, and we all kind of think we know what we're doing. To an extraordinary extent, we don't know what we're doing. We make these awful mistakes. I travel through gyms with Jeremy and Bill Fabricini and others, you know, all the time, and you look at guys who are, look to be in decent shape, and the way they're lifting weights, you just have to avert your eyes because you know how dangerous it is. Interesting.
Are there any, I mean, you brought up the traveling to gyms, so, you know, there are all these different ways, I would almost call them fads, of what rolls through our society as the next workout, and one of them, of course, is CrossFit, and then one of them currently is Orange Theory. I've done both, and, you know, there are weights involved in both, but do you have any thoughts or feelings on what you've seen at any of these places and things that people need to be aware of?
I'm not going to try to address specific things. In general, our strong bias is to free weights, if you use weights at all, or whole body exercise. In general, we think it's a pretty good idea to stay away from the machines. You know, we all loved the machines in the 60s and 70s, but the reason is that the machines make it easier, and the reason they make it easier is that they take care of all of the balance. The trouble with that is that the little muscles that contribute to your balance and keep you coordinated and so on and so forth, they atrophy if all you use is machines, and then you go to pieces. You've got these great big enormous guns, these big biceps and quads and whatnot, but you're weak as a kitten and you can't do stuff. So you have to do whole body stuff. That's the fundamental bias. But read Jeremy's stuff on the individual exercise. He's so careful. By the way, keep in mind that we also have he has a wonderful series of very carefully done videos. It's something called backforever.com. It helps with the book.
Well, one of our other favorite guests on this show is Gretchen Reynolds, who writes a blog for the New York Times, a wellness blog. And Gretchen has, there's a lot of commonality between your exercises and hers. And
I'm
she
glad
says,
to hear that.
She says sitting is, you know, the great problem that we need to address, and it's kind of
I'm
like,
sorry, a little louder.
She says that that sitting is sort of like the past cancer. It's the big issue that we need to address.
Wonderful line. She's so right.
And that doing squats is one of the easiest things that you can do. So when we interview Gretchen, of course, Lynn and I find ourselves doing squats during the interview.
Yep.
And then we stop. But we think squats are a good thing also.
Squats are wonderful. It's the single best. Well, I'm not going to say that, but it's a wonderful exercise. I do a bunch of them. You do them right. You got to do them right. If you do them wrong, you might as well go home. But do them right, and squats are terrific for you. But by the way, she's so right about sitting. Even if you work out all the time, if you spend the rest of your time just sitting, especially sitting slouched, you're cooked. You've got to somehow get yourself trained to get up. You ought to get up every half hour. I can't do that, but I get up every hour, and that makes a big difference. A standing desk is a good idea, but it's not the standing that matters. It's getting up and sitting down, getting up and sitting down. Movement is what keeps you from having what we call creep. There's a thing inside your body, a muscle creep, that's bad for your back and everything else.
Oh, no. After this show, Chris, I'm going to spend 11 hours sitting in my car on a big road trip.
Get out.
But that's going to that's going to make it a 12-hour trip instead of
11. I don't care. You'll be alive when you get there. You got to do it, man. You got to do it. And change your posture while you're driving. It's okay to hunch over just as a matter of changing your posture. Do any darn thing to move.
I definitely do that. I always.
Where are you going?
I'm going up to Sandpoint. It's 11 hours from here if you don't pull over every hour to walk
around. Where's
Sandpoint? Way northern Idaho, almost to the Canadian border.
Oh, lucky man. What fun. I hope that you can stand up when you get there.
Yeah.
Speaking of the West, you don't live in Aspen anymore, is that correct?
I don't. I was an idiot. We sold our house out there, but we're out there every year. We still ski every year. We don't go there in the summer as much. This book works. We'll take all the dough and buy a little house in Aspen.
Yes. I'm sure it's a fine time to get into the market in Aspen.
Oh, please. So if we could buy back our old house.
Yeah, exactly.
So, well, I think we sold it for like $2 million, but we couldn't believe our luck, and now it's worth $7 or something.
Oh, that's painful.
Yeah, it's no
that's
better,
painful.
Let me tell you. It's still a rat's nest, but it was beautiful. Great location.
So I happened to be at the dermatologist's office early this morning, and I had your book, and they started raving about your previous books. And it was interesting that we were talking about, you know, sitting is the new smoking sort of concept. And they said,
That's a great concept.
They said, you know, a couple of us in the office here, we move around a lot during the day. It's a dermatologist's office, but we a couple of us are doing air squats and plank, you know, just here in the office. We make kind of a game out of it. What a great idea.
You look like a dope when people don't know what you're doing, but it's a great idea.
Absolutely. And of course, doing those exercises correctly. And this was an interesting part that I really liked. We know, of course, that intervals are a wonderful exercise. And you talk about short bursts and why it might be better to do 10 to 15 second planks than those long
Jeremy's
ones.
Jeremy's very strong on that. I know guys who think the long ones are better, but I'm with Jeremy on this one. I think that if you can hold a plank for 10 seconds and then do five of them, get it exactly right, I think you're better off.
Yeah, and that's because any of these isometric exercises, your muscles fatigue after about 10 to 15 seconds.
Yeah. And you do it right. You don't start to fall apart a little.
Right. Another.
And besides, planks raggedy, 10 seconds is enough.
I know. I was so relieved to see that it would be beneficial
Me
if I
too.
Did 10 seconds and then drop to
I
my knees.
I could do them for longer, but I'd be perfectly happy to hold it for 10 seconds.
Well, yeah, because really you feel your hips starting to sag, which puts more stress on your lower back. So, hey, there's another point that this is a mix of you and Jeremy, which is so great. He's talking about the gluteus maximus, the medius, the piriformis, the quadratus lumborum, and all that, and about finding your trigger points. Well, you have these wonderful illustrations in here that shows you exactly where these muscles are, and talk, if you would, a minute about trigger points.
Trigger points are an agony. They're a muscle spasm, often in your butt, your gluteus maximus, and so on. And they can hurt just like a bad back. It's not quite the same thing, but it's a very closely related thing. And the great trick is to find them. And the thing that's tricky about them is that there's often referred pain. You know, you hurt one place, but the problem is someplace else. These little charts show you where the logical place to look. So you take it's weird. You take a tennis ball, you lie on the floor on your butt, you feel around, and all of a sudden you find some place which you may not have thought was a real place, and you just light up. It really hurts. That's the spot. And you massage that spot for 30 seconds, and it starts to get better. Then you found the trigger point, and that's going to be a huge relief.
I know you like trigger points, Lynn, because of massage therapy, and that fits right into the whole concept of how referred pain and everything. I mean, you know, everybody who has ever been hooked on massage for any period of time, if they stuck with it and they had a good therapist, has experienced that.
Yep, trigger points are a curse, and if you've got some, and if you don't want to do it yourself, you can do it yourself. If you've got a good massage person, good for you.
Well, Chris, with all the books that you've put out into the market and help people with, is there any one that's your particular favorite?
I'm nuts about Young Next Year. I just love the impact it's had on everybody's life. You know, we get these lovely, lovely calls, thousands of them. And, you know, a better person would get sick of it, but I don't. It's like having a Newfoundland dog lick your face all the time. It's just about right for me. I love the attention. But I tell you, I think this one may change more lives in a narrower band. But, you know, back pain is so darn bad. This one may be more important in a way.
Do you look
I love Young Next Year.
Do you look at this one and say, huh, it's interesting that it took, you know, I don't know how many books until this one, 4 or 5 maybe, to get to back pain?
Well, you know, it didn't occur to me because I don't have it. Jeremy came to me and he started telling me how pervasive it was. I thought, holy Toledo. And people, you know, almost all the dough, we spend $100 billion a year and almost all of it is wasted. Not all, but, you know, a ton of it. And you get the cures are either they don't work or they're temporary or whatever. And Jeremy said the behavioral change, just like Young Next Year, behavioral change affects permanent change in your back.
And when you go,
that was worth it. You know, I had to learn the whole story, but that's part of the fun of what I do. Learning a whole new discipline like this, brother, what a privilege.
And Chris, when you do speaking events, what does that look like? Do you speak to specific topics like, staying younger or nutrition or back, or do you kind of give a overall talk about health and wellness?
I mostly give an overall talk that takes the essence of younger next year, but I talk to my clients first, and, if they've got a very young audience, I focus on the immediate changes in quality of life. If they're somewhat older, I talk about the fact that you can be that aging can be squared. That you don't have to have that slow, steady decline. Some people are interested in nutrition. I can talk a little about that. And we're starting to get inquiries about the back thing. On the back thing, it's going to be mostly Jeremy doing the talking because there's an expertise to it. This is real, honest to God, scientific expertise, and it's better to have him do it. But I do the general stuff. I do introductions and whatnot. I give them the basic ideas. I'm giving a talk tomorrow when they ask me to do, maybe 10 or 15 minutes on back pain.
And I just want to say before we let you go here that, I mean, this is bulging discs, herniated discs for stenosis, all those things that really you're told that the only way to get through this is surgery. And, if you've done a lot of research on the back, you know that that is not true. I mean, obviously, medical help is there when we absolutely need it, but only after you've read the Younger Next Year back book and really taken, change your behavior.
Yeah, there are some things, if you're so far gone, if you've actually ruptured your disc, which is comparably rare, by the way, but if you've done that, there's a decent chance you're going to have surgery. Too bad, but true. But you want to know that first. And here's an interesting thing. Even if that's right, even if you have a fusion of discs, which is the most overprescribed operation in America, costs $100,000, even if you do that, you still need to do this behavioral change, because otherwise the same behavior is going to attack you one disc further, bone further down. You got to change your behavior always.
The book is The Younger Next Year Back Book, The Whole Body Plan to Conquer Back Pain Forever. Our guest, and so nice to have you back, Chris Crowley, and he's co-authored this book with Dr. Jeremy James. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Thanks so much. A lot of fun. Talk to you soon, I hope.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.